Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. In a world grappling with climate change, the loss of tropical forests is a critical concern. In 2022 alone, the planet witnessed the loss of 4.1 million hectares of tropical forest, contributing significantly to global carbon emissions. Viridis Terra is addressing this urgent issue by focusing on the restoration of significantly degraded lands in the Ucayali and Loreto regions of Peru. This project was launched in January of 2024, and today's Sustainable Finance Podcast guest is Martin Bedouin Nadeau, Viridis Terra's founder and CEO. We will learn today how Martin and his project team are establishing biodiverse forests and agroforestry systems on degraded land, integrating native tree species and crops such as cocoa and citrus based on more sustainable farm management systems. This aids in carbon sequestration and provides a sustainable source of income for local farming communities, empowering them toward long-term economic stability. Hello, Martin, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Thank you, Paul, for having me. It's great to be here.
We're very excited that you've joined us. This is a story we've been waiting to tell with your firm, and let's get started because we have a lot to tell our followers. Let's begin by having you explain the global challenge we face with land degradation, its main causes, and the impact on our lives, the economy, and society.
Excellent, Paul. Well, if you look at the challenge, is everything we build, we use, we create is made of natural resources. Our cars, phone, houses, the food that we eat, everything that we make is made of natural resources. So in the past, in the last centuries, human has been extracting all these natural resources to build what they need to be able to thrive and feed themselves, but without thinking about what happened after. So just extracting these natural resources. And this has led to the degradation over 6 billion acres around the world. So it's 2.5 times the size of U.S., where these land used to produce goods and services for our economy, but it don't do it anymore because of the way we have managed the land and we have extracted these natural resources. And all that degradation has led to a lot of impact on climate change. For example, about a quarter of all global emissions come from deforestation, land degradation, land use change. So that's huge impact on climate. But at the same time, because you lose nature, you use a natural buffer that protects us against the extreme climatic conditions. So where places where there's a lot of degradation, they are even more impacted by the climate crisis. So it's huge. At the same time, we are losing right now more than 100 times faster species because we have been degraded our natural ecosystem. And many scientists say that we are losing the species faster than when the dinosaur went extinct. So it's also a huge challenge that is coming in, probably bigger even than climate change, the biodiversity crisis, where the only reason why we can thrive as a species is because we have an ecosystem or environment that allow for us to be able to live. And because we are degrading that biodiversity, we are starting to put at risk that healthy ecosystem that we live in right now. And about 40% of the global population live in degraded landscapes. So there's huge impact on their health, but also they have also problem with water and the food shortage, other natural resource shortage. And has huge impact on their lives because they don't have an economy anymore where they can thrive well with good revenues because these land do not produce anymore these goods and services. Right now, when you look at the global landscape, experts say that we are losing about $10 trillion per year of global economic opportunities because these land don't produce these goods and services anymore. And more than half of the global GDP is at risk because of nature degradation, because a lot of sector like the forest sector, the agricultural sector, all the natural resources sector, they're all integrated into these nature and these natural resources. And because we are destroying these natural resources, we don't have access anymore to these goods and services. And it's putting at risk a lot of these different sector. A good example is the cocoa sector, where has been like the price right now is 5 times bigger than it was 3 years ago because of that degradation, where you don't have access to as much commodity as you used to before, and it's causing a lot of problem at the global landscape. So the chocolate that we are buying for Easter right now, it's 5 times more expensive. So it has impact on people.
So now, Martin, this is not very good news so far, but at the same time, we want to find out what kinds of solutions you and other people are using to address this global problem. Could you tell us what kind of solutions are out there that can be used?
But for the solutions start by, you know, in the past, people were seeing restoring degraded land as a cost. Because of that, because it's a cost, because people want to put as less money as possible to restore the land. And usually what happens, it's not sustainable. So y'all stuck for decades with these land that we did some works, but it's not restored yet. It's not producing yet because we have not invested as much money as we should have. So the first point is to start seeing that not as a cost, but as an impact investment that will generate return in the future, and invest accordingly to restore that land. So you will create so much good and services that will be produced that it will be very attractive for the private sector to start to invest. So that's the first thing we need to do to fix, seeing that as an investment. And one thing that has been proven in the past, every dollar you invest in restoration can bring $7 to $30 in economic benefits. And so if it's done right, a lot of value can be created. The second thing is we need to work that all industries, all sector will become nature positive and net zero. So a big focus on transforming the supply chain to ensure we will transform it, and all the product that we get into our lives will have a positive impact on nature, not the opposite. So that's the second part that is very important. So these are the key to start with. And then after that, we need to, like company like us, Veredestera, we started to develop biotechnologies, for example, that can increase up to 2 to 3 times the productivity of the land. So if you increase the productivity of the land more quickly, you can create value more quickly. So it can be more attractive for the private sector. And we can be more sustainable, more effective over the long term. So that's some of the things that are very important. It's always also important to remember that the problem is not an environmental problem. It's more a socio-economic problem. It's because usually when you look at the cause, you know, degradation happened because we harvest timber to build our houses, or we need commodities like to produce your food or anything. A lot of people are deforesting and degrading the land for subsistence agriculture. So if you can show them that it will make more money managing sustainably these new forests, agroforests, and ecosystem, they will stop this deforestation and degradation cycle and start focusing on managing sustainably these, as a good steward, these natural capital. So we will have the impact we are looking for at the late level.
That's what Veredestera is all about, right? Tell us more about your work and what you're accomplishing so far in this work with Veredestera.
Yes, Paul, I founded the company over 10 years ago. So we started in extractive sector. So that's where the market was more mature. like mining oil and gas companies looking for solution to restore the land after they are done mining, they are done exploiting the natural resources. And that's where we'll develop all our biotechnologies. So that's where we were able to show we can grow a forest, an agroforest, directly on rocks. So there's no soil anymore. And then we started to move towards all type of degraded land. We started to work, for example, in the Caribbean, West Africa, South America, working on land that was degraded by unsustainable agriculture, unsustainable forest management, and bringing these biotechnologies in the field. One thing we were saying is if we want to scale, we need to work with thousands of different landowner communities and people. So it's very sophisticated, complex operation when you work in the field at a very large scale landscape level. So in 2020, we started to develop a new platform. That platform, it's FDM, we call it Field Data Management. It's focused on automating all the operation from A to Z when you start restoring a land, signing the contracts with the landowner, how we share the benefits, so which type of system we restore, how much it costs, how much profit and revenues it will bring over time. And all the support of the operation of producing the inputs, doing the restoration, managing sustainably after that. So all of that has been, we started to develop that platform to better scale the operation so we can be more effective and more impact that we are looking for. So the goal when I started Veritasterra was to bring new technologies and also a multidisciplinary team that will fight that global problem of land degradation.
So that's what you've been developing for the last decade through the work at Veritasterra. And you also launched a large-scale restoration support process in 2021 called Trees of Lives. Tell us about that initiative and let us know what's going on there.
Well, in the past, land restoration was, like I said earlier, was seen as a cost. So mostly NGOs were working to getting donation to restore land. And for me, that was always a problem because without the private sector involved, we could not scale at the level we needed to fix the problem. And at the same time, we couldn't ensure the sustainability because usually when it's donation, we just go plant trees and we are gone, but it doesn't fix the long-term economic aspect that was very important to make these projects sustainable. So that's where we started to develop Trees of Life, which is an investment vehicle where people could invest in the projects. And then we will bring that capital, sign 30, 40 years contract with the landowner, and all the profit coming out of the project will be shared 50-50 between the landowner that we sign with, usually people that are close to poverty, and the investor that invests in. So that was really an impact investment play that we were making at the time. So we launched in 2021. We mobilized, we were able to fund the first project, a pilot project that we did in Peru with that investment vehicle. The challenge I saw is that it was so new in a new sector because the sector we are in right now, it's like 25 years ago in the renewable energy sector. So it's very new. People have a hard time. It's not proven yet. So how can you prove the revenues you will get in 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now? So because it was so new, it was hard to have it was very demanding to mobilize investor for the amount we were mobilizing. So that's where, after mobilizing enough to do the pilot projects, we started more to go after large corporation that net zero nature positive objective. So we started to work with tech companies, with a commodity company, like a oil palm company, for example, that is looking to reach the nature positive. And then we decided to put a hold on Trees of Life on the short term until the market is more ready. Because one thing we saw is most investors in the financial sector, yet they are not ready to take a 2 or 3% less financial returns for 20% more impact-adjusted return. And because us, we were signing these landowners, working with them and sharing the benefits, for sure, a big part of the benefits were also going to these people in the field. So it was reducing the overall IRR for the investors. And some investor were saying that, oh, the IRR, the project, because we share the benefits, is a bit low compared to the risk for them that they are used to. So that's where we decided to put it all and continue to make progress with large corporation. But with a goal to bring Prism of Life back a few years from now when the market is more ready and potentially an equity traded fund that could be offered in Europe first and then in North America, where that could be very attractive when the market is more ready. So, but that was a good experience. We gained a lot of experience from it. We are getting a lot of data to show how much the cost is in the field and how much revenues we are able to bring in these projects. So that's very good. That's a good start to build better in the future. One thing I like about that product is a lot of people were saying like reaching net zero, like removing carbon, it's a cost. But with that investment, you also get carbon removal credits. And for example, I invested $60,000 into Trees of Life personally. And within 8 years, I'm able to neutralize all my emissions since I was born. And it's an investment. I still will have in the future an asset that has value that will potentially bring distribution within 4, 5, 7, 8 years. So I believe we will see more of this kind of product in the future that with real impact that are transforming the world to create a better world and that everyone will benefit from it, not just the investors.
Thank you for telling us that personal story about your investment in Trees of Lies. That's a strong personal commitment, and it's proving to be a good return on investment as well. And it seems to me, Martin, that that's one of the most important things that people in sustainable finance today can position to corporate investors is that these kinds of programs work. They take time, like any long-term successful investment strategy, but over time, you will see productivity, you will see profit, you will see restoration of degraded farmland. And I think that's terrific. What kinds of other challenges, if any, did you want to share about how this is going and how it supports the people that you work with in Peru?
But the challenge we got in the last year and a half is that the corporation, they were in the past, they were starting to invest into this project. And they saw that with the needs they had, the investment they needed to do is so big that they wanted to start more doing offtake agreements. So to buy the commodities, buy the carbon removal, buy the biodiversity gain with long-term contract instead of investing in the projects. That the advantage we had with these corporation is they were not looking really at the risk return profile, but more on the impact they were bringing on the table and the end product they were receiving. So for us, that was good because we don't buy the land, we work with the communities, so the risk are a little bit higher. But for them, because the impact was there, they were very attracted to that. But now, because they are moving more towards offtake agreement, we have no choice to mobilize the financial sector. And because the financial sector look at risk return, we see a lot of people that get traction right now is that they buy the land. And the challenge I see for Verestera is that if we start buying the land, we don't fix the problem. Because the people, you buy the land almost nothing because the land is degraded. And then the people you buy from, they go somewhere else and they continue to deforest and degrade like they used to. So you just transfer the problem somewhere else. So you don't have real impact on climate, you don't have real impact on biodiversity. But that's the kind of project that have traction right now because for sure, the financial sector see that if I buy the land, at least you own the land. So if the product does not work, you can resell the land. So the risk is lower. So that's some of the challenge we see. Right now, we are trying to work to mobilize the risking instrument, like guarantee insurance to the project. So that will allow us to continue to work with this landowner to bring a real solution to the project, the prime at scale, that everyone will benefit from it. But it takes time. So for sure, if in the network of Sustainable Finance Podcast, if anyone has any ideas or has interest into de-risking instrument, but please like reach out to us, because that's something that will be very important for us in the future to be able to mobilize the financial sector and scale our operation at very large scale more quickly and continue to have the impact we are looking for. So that's a very important point. That's been a challenge in the last 18 to 24 months. And for sure, the current situation all around the world also, there is less capital available, and people tend to go more towards more traditional investment because it's less risky. So that's also a short-term challenge that we need to get through until better times where more capital is available, and then it will be easier to scale the operation. The opportunities, I mean, there is a lot of opportunities. For example, Europe has a new law coming in 2026 that no product imported into Europe would be allowed to have deforestation. So all product will need to be deforestation free, nature positive. So that's a huge opportunity to transform the sector, working with commodity buyers and investors, the one that usually create these commodities like timber, food products, anything that goes into Europe. So we can work with these large corporations to bring the operation nature positive and have impact at the landscape level. So that's a huge opportunity that is very important for the development of the sector. The second one is the Kunming-Montreal agreement, which is very similar to the Paris Agreement for Climate, but this one is for biodiversity. That was signed a bit more than 2 years ago. You can see now that a lot of countries like Europe right now has an objective to restore 30% of all land has been degraded by 2030. So that's another opportunity where these government are putting these restoration law in place to help move the sector more quickly to bring this solution at scale more quickly. And we see the same thing in Canada right now, where we have this objective of restoring 15 million hectares of land within the next 10 to 20 years, and starting to put the nature plan in place with funding so we can start working and bringing a solution. But the key in all of this is we need to have a price, and I would say a price that is stable on ecological services like carbon biodiversity. If we start putting a price on this on the long term, it's easier for a company like us to do this investment, to bring investor and do this investment for 30, 40 years. Like, for example, Canada has had his carbon tariffication in place in the last 3 years, and the pricing was starting to be attractive to do restoration project with farmers in Canada to go from traditional agriculture to regenerative agroforestry. But because we don't know what's going to happen when the government change, we cannot start making this investment, because if 3 to 5 years from now, that carbon tariffication is abandoned, but you lose all the money that was invested because you don't have a client anymore that will buy the product at the end. So these are also very important parts that when ensuring that you have a good carbon pricing and biodiversity pricing in place, you can help develop this sector more quickly, with more stability, which is very important.
Good. So what you're saying is that depending on the regulatory environment where you are doing projects, the value of that stability that the regulation brings to the long-term project development is so important to the funding that you get with large companies, because they're looking out 5, 10, 20 years in terms of what kind of return they're going to get on investment. I think that's one of the key issues that a lot of people do not understand about these large-scale projects in sustainable finance and ecosystem restoration. But you've articulated a lot of good details today, Martin, about this. And so let's find out where online our followers can go to find out more about Viridis Terra and how they can get in touch with you to answer questions that they have about the topics that we've discussed in today's episode.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much for this. I'm looking forward to hear from any of your audience, for sure. We are looking for allies. There is a lot of opportunities and challenge to get through in this sector, and more people that join the mission, more we have better chance to succeed and change the world for the better. But you can reach out to LinkedIn directly, like send me a message on LinkedIn, Martin Baudouinado, that would be great. Or you can send also an email to info@viridisterra.com, so our team will definitely answer any question and reach out so we can have a meeting and discuss further. So they'll be very happy to hear from anyone.
Okay, and they can also get information about projects you've already completed or projects that are in process right now at those same email addresses. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Right now we have project in Canada, West Africa, the Caribbean, South America. Our biggest operation still in Peru. Okay. So we are working on multiple larger scale expansion project right now. So looking for new partners also to support these new projects. So very looking forward to get this project started.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time today, Martin. We look forward to finding out down the road how some of these projects are going. Thanks, Martin, for joining us in this episode of the Sustainable Finance Podcast, and our followers can join us again next week for the next episode. My name is Paul Ellis, and this is the Sustainable Finance Podcast.